Hi, this is John Stone Street, president of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, which you can find online at breakpoint.org. The Colson Center is pleased to support listening in. Enjoy the program.
I'm Warren Smith, and today you'll be listening in on Conversations About Life and Marriage with the Strege family, the first family in the country to adopt a so-called snowflake baby, and J.P. DeGance, whose work to preserve marriage contributed to a dramatic fall in divorce in a major American city.
In the world of serving the kingdom, a lot of times we believe that good intentions are sufficient. Actually, in a lot of ways, to be good stewards of what God's given us, we should be more focused on outcomes than anyone else because of how serious our work really is. It has eternal consequences.
That was J.P. DeGance, and we'll be hearing from him later in the program. But I want to begin today with the Strege family and their remarkable story, a story that's changing the conversation about life and the unborn in this country. John and Marlene Strege were struggling with infertility more than 20 years ago. They thought about in vitro fertilization, but decided that there were moral and ethical problems with that approach. They considered adoption, too. But their study of in vitro fertilization caused them to realize that there were more than a million embryos frozen, essentially in limbo, many of them having been abandoned by the in vitro fertilization process. They decided to adopt one of those embryos. To make a very long story short, Marlene and John ended up with a beautiful baby girl, Hannah. You'll hear from all three of them on today's program. I first heard about this story because John Strege, who's also a well-known sports writer, has turned their story into a book. It's called A Snowflake Named Hannah, Ethics, Faith, and the First Adoption of a Frozen Embryo. Marlene Strege and your whole family here, welcome to the program. Your husband, John, who wrote the book, said that you're the real expert on snowflake adoption. Well, tell me what made you such an expert, how you got in this world in the first place, I mean, other than having a lovely daughter.
Well, in 1997, my husband and I had been through infertility treatments, and at that time, the doctor suggested that we use donor eggs with my husband's sperm to create a child, and we were uncomfortable with that because that'd been creating a child outside the marriage bond. So I asked the doctor, do you have any embryos that we could adopt, frozen embryos? And he said, well, sure, but nobody ever asked me that question. But I want to know, what does God think about this? So we contacted several pastors in our church, Lutheran church, as well as Dr. James Dobson. He was then with Focus on the Family. And everybody confirmed what we already knew, in that these were human lives. And if the original family who created them was not going to go back to get them, then yes, they need to be placed for adoption. So that's what started this whole ball rolling in 1997. We then contacted our good friend at Nightlight Christian Adoptions. He did all the legal background checking, how to even adopt a frozen embryo. Now, these are frozen embryos that people go through IVF, in vitro fertilization. They have their children, and then they can't parent any more children. So these embryos now, there's about a million collecting in our country right now that need homes. But at that time, Ron Stoddart then created the Snowflakes Embryo Adoption Program. And we were matched with a family that had remaining embryos, 20 of them. We adopted all 20. Once the contracts were signed, then those embryos were our children. We also completed all the requirements for the state of California for adoption, home study, all that, even though legally we didn't have to, because the legal status of those frozen embryos, and still is today, is property and not people. Once those embryos, though, were our children, they were Federal Express to our clinic in Pasadena, California, and then my body was prepared to receive them. And so I became the adoptive mom and the birth mom. So Hannah is our lovely daughter, who's 21 now, and she was the only one born of those 20 frozen embryos that we adopted.
And Hannah was the first? It had never happened before?
Up until then, you could do donor programs. You can still do donor programs today where couples that have remaining embryos can donate them to their doctor, their infertility doctor, and then he provides them to couples in his practice. But you can choose those embryos based on hair color, eye color, skin color of the people that created them. What we have is an open adoption. So the placing family chose us and we chose them just like a birth mom would choose who she wants to parent her children. So we have an open adoption. Everyone knows who everyone is. Hannah's been to Disneyland with her genetic siblings. And like a donor program, you would never know if your child was related to other children out there who would be full genetic siblings.
Well, that is a remarkable story. And John, you are a writer. You're a sports writer. You'd been a sports writer for many years. And at what point maybe you knew from the beginning, at what point did you say to yourself, you know what, we want to tell the world this story?
Well, I never set out on this thinking I'm going to write a book on it. I'd written sports books before, but Hannah was born at about the same time that a controversy was developing in Washington, D.C., because a scientist had discovered a way to extract stem cells from embryos, which destroy the embryos. And they thought this held great potential for a lot of cures of some of life's most debilitating diseases. And so as we progressed through embryo adoption and then this controversy, it almost seemed like God had placed us here for a reason. They needed to put human faces to what we're talking about regarding embryonic stem cell research. You're destroying human beings in this research. And as we progressed even further and we started to look back on it, I think this is a pretty good book. And it's twofold. Two parts of the book is us having Hannah and inadvertently starting the Snowflakes Embryo Adoption Program, but the political ramifications too, and we see God's fingerprints all over this story.
So, Hannah, we've been talking about you. How does that feel? I mean, is that like attending your own funeral whenever you've got people talking about you? I mean, how does this hit you as a, you know, now that you're old enough to kind of understand all of the issues, and does it seem weird for us to be talking about you, or is this like a part of your life that you've been raised with?
Yes, this is like a part of my life that I've been raised with. Doing interviews and talking about embryo adoption has been something close to my family for a really long time. And I couldn't be happier to be promoting this.
Well, that's really remarkable. So what has happened since? And maybe Marlene, I should come back to you for that question. In other words, Hannah was the first. How many have followed?
Well, the 700th baby was born actually on Hannah's birthday this last year. So on December 31st, 2019, the 700th baby was born through Nightlight Christian Adoptions. There are other organizations that do something like embryo adoption, but Nightlight, I believe, is the only one that does it with adoption best practices. So even to this day, human embryos are still property, but they use adoption best practices. So couples complete home studies, there's matching, there's open adoption, and that's just really everything is child-centered and in the best interest of the child.
So 700 is great, that's fantastic, but you said there were a million.
There's a million frozen embryos. Now, it's really quite a feat for a human being to survive a freeze and a thaw. Statistically, only 50% survive a thaw. That doesn't include the transfer, the implantation, the carrying to 9 months. So that's a lot for that human being to go through.
So let me interrupt you there. The fact that Hannah is even here with us is really, that's really sort of a marvelous thing, right?
Absolutely. That she's here, that these 700 babies, we celebrate each and every one of them. But a lot of the other side of the coin is that a lot of people don't know about this still. 22 years later, people are like, I've never heard of this. And, you know, we try as hard as we can to get the word out, but there's a couple reasons why. People who don't believe that life begins at fertilization really don't want to promote this. And then the other side is that churches sometimes do not feel that this is right before God, so they don't want to promote this as well. So we're kind of dealing with those two issues.
So, and John, again, is that sort of why you wanted to tell the story? Because there's so much ignorance and misunderstanding about the issue?
Well, there's no question. We knew we'd be doing interviews and we'd help get the word out on the Snowflake's Embryo Adoption Program and just continuing to try to spread the word, which Marlene does a great job already, and so does Hannah, but we need to get it to more people for sure.
Yeah, Marlene, you wanted to add something to that?
I just wanted to say that this is a dream come true for women, that you can be both the adoptive mom and the birth mom, that you can give birth to your own adopted child is a dream come true. This resonates with women who have gone through infertility, and that's what I hear from Snowflake moms across the country, that they could give birth to their own adopted child and go through all of that, go through pregnancy, go through birthing and nursing and do all of that, and wearing maternity clothes, all those things you've dreamed about doing. It's really amazing.
So, Hannah, I kind of want to give you the last word here. You're 21 years old now. You're obviously in, you know, we've already heard you speak. You're enthusiastic about being a spokesperson for this movement and being involved in the pro-life cause. What do you want to, it's not that you're not already grown up, but what do you want to do when you grow up? Is this going to be a cause for life for you?
Yeah, so I'm a senior at Biola University in Southern California studying sociology, and I will graduate in December of this year, and I hope to pursue social work. So I really want to pave my own way in the social work field and be an advocate for embryo adoption and in the politics of the pro-life movement and moving forward with these lives.
Well, Hannah, what a wonderful word. What a wonderful testimony. Congratulations on the success that you've had so far. I know Biola a little bit. It's a tough school. It's a good school. Congratulations on getting as far as you have so far. And John and Marlene, you know, as the father of four kids myself, I know you must be proud.
Oh, well, she made the dean's list last semester. So, yes, we're very proud of that.
It's been a great story to document. Yeah, one other reason I wanted to document it, so she knows what everything we went through, and that other snowflakes know, you know, if they want to explain to their kids the history of how this all came about.
Well, it's clear, I'm sure, that y'all went through a lot, but, you know, the reward was great. So I can see that by meeting Hannah. So thank you guys for being on the program. Thanks for what you've done and what you are doing to advocate for life in this current culture. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was the Strege family, John, Marlene, and Hannah. John Strege's new book is A Snowflake Named Hannah, Ethics, Faith, and the First Adoption of a Frozen Embryo. I had this conversation with the Strege's at the recent meeting of the National Religious Broadcasters in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm Warren Smith. More in a moment.
I'm John Stone Street, president of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. You can help us carry on the legacy of Chuck Colson by becoming a Colson Fellow. To find out more about this intensive one-year deep dive program into Christian Worldview, go to breakpoint.org and click on Colson Fellows at the top of the page.
Welcome back. I'm Warren Smith, and today you're listening in on a couple of conversations I had recently about life and marriage. Up next, J.P. DeGance. J.P. DeGance spent the early part of his career in politics, working for Americans for Prosperity, the Culture Freedom Initiative, and the Coke Company's public sector. He said he learned a couple of things during those experiences. First, most of the truly vexing problems in our culture are not political problems, but cultural problems. Problems related to family, community, and other societal structures that either have or lack moral and spiritual foundations. Secondly, he realized that good intentions are not enough. There are hundreds of thousands of churches and Christian ministries in this country that lack the processes and systems discipline that he learned in his business and public policy career. And that's where his organization, Communio, comes in. Communio has pioneered strategies that work on a regional scale to mitigate cultural problems. For example, a two-year project in Jacksonville, Florida, reduced the divorce rate there 28%. A coalition of churches that worked on this project also saw significant increases in church attendance. I'll have more to say about these data at the next break, but let's begin with my conversation with J.P. DeGance, which I recently had in Nashville. JP, thanks for being on the program. I've known about your work for a long time because you've been kind of around conservative circles for years.
Yeah, I have been, Warren. It's before getting into what I'm currently doing in
Communio
and consulting with churches to strengthen marriages and relationships, I was in politics and public policy from 2002 to 2013. Just came to the realization that that a lot of what's going on in the country from a political side has its origins in the collapse of the family. And I really wanted to apply a lot of the strategy and tools and techniques and technologies that I learned in the public policy world and using it to serve churches, consulting with them to strengthen marriages.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of our listeners will have heard me and other of my guests say over the years, politics is downstream from culture.
Yeah.
And which is, that's not, I mean, politics can shape culture
sure.
as well.
Yeah, sure. There's a back and forth, yeah. but definitely culture influences politics more than vice versa. Yeah. Although there is a vice versa.
That's right. I think that's right. And but that is an interesting take. So because the political realm that you've operated in for so many years is really data driven. I mean, it's like it's lists and data mining and
binary outcomes, right? You know whether or not you won or lost, right? And everybody knows it. And I think a lot of times in ministry, in the world of serving the kingdom, a lot of times we believe that good intentions are sufficient. Actually, in a lot of ways, to be good stewards of what God's given us, we should be more focused on outcomes than anyone else because of how serious our work really is. It has eternal consequences.
So specifically, you're trying to build a family.
Yes.
And
yes.
So how do you use the ideas that we've already talked about to influence the outcomes in the arena of family building?
Yeah, so what we've developed is what we've trademarked as our concept is a data-informed full circle relationship ministry. And in data-informed, we mean using data to diagnose problems in a congregation and in the community and then use that same data to do targeted outreach to draw folks in. And by full circle relationship ministry, we mean designing strategies and best practices around each stage of relationship life, single, single again, married, engaged, and those in crisis. And we call it the development of it is a ministry engagement ladder. So it's pulling people in based on certain felt needs in the data, inviting them in digitally or through direct mail. Then they come to an outreach event. That outreach event is, say, 90% popcorn, 10% spinach around relationships, like a fun date night, childcare provided. Then you're invited back. There's a tail on that we want to move folks up to the ongoing engagement experience, we call it. That is how a church has activities that still heavy on community and then still yet invited to that next step, which is a growth journey or skills-based ministry to help folks have healthier relationships. And that's content. We don't author content, which is great. We think it's an important thing for us. We recognize there's a lot of great content that already exists out there. And we just need it. It usually sits on people's bookshelves. But when you can help a church have an integrated strategy. So when we talk about politics and campaigns, I was used to working on issue campaigns where you'd think from the beginning to the end, an outcome that you were trying to achieve, and you'd have an integrated strategy that's multi-channel to achieve your outcome. That's what we want to help churches think through. What is that multi-channel ministry strategy to produce changes in relationship health and stronger families?
So walk me through it. So I'm a pastor of a local church. I got 350 members or people coming on a regular Sunday morning, which is, you know, actually most people think about the mega churches in this country, but most churches are 100 to 200 people.
That's right. That's
so
right.
How do you help a church that's that size, that small?
Yeah, that's perfect. Those are a lot of the types of churches that we're working with today. So, and we work with churches of all sizes. But first step is survey. We help them run a mobile survey. Pastor gives a sermon on marriage, says that we're going to focus on this more. We lead up with a survey that we've designed with an academic that helps the pastor really understand how people are doing, the singles and marriage. So he says, everybody here, we're going to be focusing on marriages and relationships and really pouring into them and knowing how we can serve them more. And so if you're in a relationship right now, text this number. And if you're single right now, text this number. They get that mobile survey right away. It takes about 60 seconds to answer and gives a pastor an immediate, quick snapshot. We help them push that out through email follow-up. Typically, we're seeing about 50% completion rates for churches who run it the way that we advise them on. Then we model the community and model the church's members, and we can provide them with like a high-level summary, sort of an aggregated report of what percentage of people are struggling right now in their marriage, what percentage of folks are expecting new parents, what percentage of folks are cohabiting right now with and without kids. Super important to think about cohabitation because it is exploding in size, and it's bad for women and it's bad for children. A woman in a cohabiting relationship is the most likely to suffer from domestic violence. In fact, the safest woman in America, you wouldn't know this right now by listening to the media, the safest woman from violence in America is a married woman. And so we'll help them think through those groups of people. And then design, we do a 6-hour planning meeting with them. We set out 12 and 24 month goals, really clear outcomes that they want to achieve, okay, in ministry.
So give me an example of what some of those outcomes would be. Greater attendance, more
people. Yeah. There's we call them lag measures and lead measures. A lag is something that you can't directly control, but if you have the right lead measures, we'll move the lag. So the lag measures are things like more Sunday attendance, increased giving. The big one that we try to push churches on is normalizing marriage ministry by having at least half of everybody under the age of 50 participating in multiple marriage ministry activities in the church over the course of the year. And if you've gotten to those three, those are lags, we help them design three leads. And those leads are around our ministry engagement ladder, sort of specific activities. So the number of outreach events around relationship ministry, the number of ongoing engagement experiences, and how many people are coming. And then the growth journey, which is the number of people who've moved from those first two into that highest level step, which is skills-based ministry, and how many are going to complete it. So if you have really quantifiable goals in each of those leads, you'll be able to start moving each of the lags. We're working with the largest evangelical church in Pennsylvania right now, and they've set pretty aggressive goals on their lead measures. They were trying to get 10,000 members through 8 hours or more couples relationship education. They're about 8 weeks in the year. I've already hit 67%. They did their first outreach event. They had 6,200 people. 32% of them were first time ever on that campus. They've never had an outreach event so successful. And so the approach of having a systematic strategy and following it works. So we help that church design that strategy. And then we calendar it over the course of the next year. And then we help them work their plan and then recalibrate their plan. We think of it as sort of a ministry campaign manager.
You're listening in on my conversation with J.P. DeGance. We had this conversation in Nashville, Tennessee. I'll have more with J.P. DeGance after this short break.
Hi, I'm John Stone Street, the president of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, and I'm delighted that the Colson Center is now the lead sponsor for Listening In. The Colson Center exists to inform, equip, and unite believers, and that's why we're delighted to unite with World to bring this informative program to you, a program designed to better equip you for the work of the gospel. To learn more about the Colson Center and our Breakpoint radio and podcast ministries, please visit us at breakpoint.org. That's breakpoint.org.
Welcome back. You're listening in today on my conversation with J.P. DeGance. DeGantz makes some remarkable claims about the results he and the groups he's worked with have had in reducing divorce in Jacksonville, Florida, and in other places around the country. When I hear claims like this, I naturally have a bit of skepticism, so I decided to check them out. I called Brad Wilcox at the University of Virginia, who is one of the country's leading experts on marriage, and was likewise skeptical at hearing some of these claims. So he and his team did a study and essentially confirmed what DeGantz is saying here. Wilcox's conclusion is that while divorce was already in decline in the region, the areas where DeGantz's team worked, primarily in Duval County, Florida, saw significantly greater declines in the number and rate of divorce. The entire 40-page study put together by Brad Wilcox and his team is available at the Institute for Family Studies website. To learn more about how they accomplished these remarkable results, let's return to my conversation with J.P. DeGantz. Let me ask a couple of devil's advocate questions, if I could.
Please.
This sounds really interesting, and I'm kind of a data guy myself, so I resonate with that. And I'm also, you know, of the opinion that God gave us orderly minds. He gave us the ability to think logically and systematically. So I'm very much in favor of this kind of a regimen, you know, sort of systematic approach. However, I can imagine that a lot of people, and including myself at certain times, would say, well, what about the Holy Spirit in all of this? I mean, how, you know, we've got a long history in the evangelical church of programs. Some of them have even been really successful. And then we discover that, you know, that the church is rotten spiritually on the inside. They've been very successful from a marketing point of view, and the spiritual maturity of the leadership and the people in the pews have been lacking, and we see a lot of scandals and things fall apart. Talk to those issues.
Yeah, look, the Holy Spirit is the author of life, right? And he's given us our reason. And I think God's providence works through us and frequently. And so God's given us a lot of these great tools and resources. And the Holy Spirit wants to work through those as well. He's God of everything. He's God of the universe. That means he's sovereign over these tools. He's sovereign over these strategies. He's sovereign over all that I've learned, all that you've learned. And so we should certainly be at peace at applying the best practices from anything that is consistent or certainly not inconsistent with the gospel, and sanctifying it and bringing it effectively into the church. And I think there shouldn't be anything wrong with that. I don't think, I would say, inaction, you have prayer and work are both necessary for success. You needed, you know, there's the ancient tradition in Christianity is Martha and Mary. One sat at Jesus' feet, the other one worked to make sure everybody, all the guests in the home were taken care of. In a way, you need both. And that's what I would encourage your listeners on.
So talk about some results. You mentioned this Pennsylvania church. How long have y'all been doing this, and what have you seen?
Yeah, so we came out of a testing period where we did a big, robust test in Jacksonville, Florida. We worked with more than 50 churches from across Duval County, a lot of Baptist churches, Community Bible Church, the largest evangelical church in Duval County. Celebration Church was a phenomenal partner. Wayne Lanier, who's one of the pastors there, is just a rock star. And then was a number of the Catholic parishes as well. And we ended up moving almost 60,000 people in the county through 4-hour or longer couples relationship education. We moved more than 28 million digital impressions over a 3-year time frame, targeting folks who looked like they had a felt relationship need. The divorce rate dropped 24% in that 3-year period.
And we had wait a minute, let me pause you there. How do you know that? How do you?
So
divorce rate in Duval County dropped.
Yeah, that's right. The entire divorce rate in the county dropped 24%. There were 24% fewer divorce filings in that period. We had independent scholars from the University of Virginia, Florida State University, which is the arch rival to my alma mater. So I don't, you know, up until now, I've not considered it a university, but I guess I begrudgingly have to now, because a good scholar there said that there is no demographic explanation for that sharp decline other than our interventions there. And we had a phenomenal local partner. I always tell folks in Live Life Ministries, who was actually the boots on the ground while we were providing a lot of the data tools and resources. And there was just a tremendous movement across the county as a result.
So when did that happen? When was that?
2006 to 2018.
Okay, so what are you doing now?
So now we're starting 4 new citywide initiatives. We've been blessed. We're a nonprofit, and so we have funders, and we have a pay-for model where churches can pay for our services and our donors subsidize that. But so we have 4 city projects: Billings, Montana, the Permian Basin, Midland and Odessa, Texas, big cities in Denver, Colorado, and Fort Worth, Texas. We'll be working with large churches in all those cities, 500 person and above churches in all those cities. And then we'll have countywide digital marketing in support of efforts in those cities that's getting started.
So Duval County, Jacksonville, Florida was sort of the pilot. Now you're rolling it out to some different cities, kind of different geography and different demographics to make sure that the model is actually a repeatable model. And when do you expect results?
By the end of the second year, early third year, we should start. I mean, first off, you start to see proxy results fairly quickly. So we think at about the 18-month mark, churches are going to start to see bumps in attendance and giving and that sort of thing. Between 24 months and 36 months, you're going to start to see countywide impact on data around family stability trends. We're also working with individual churches that reach out to us. So I mentioned the one in Pennsylvania that's not part of one of the big city initiatives. We have churches we're working with in every mainland U.S. time zone from sea to shining sea.
And so the long-term goal is you're going to do these 4 cities, you're going to see some results, you're going to learn some lessons, you're going to tweak the program, and donors are going to respond, hopefully, to the way that this
That's right. We have a vision goal over the next 5 years. We'd like to get to half of the, consider this, half of the U.S. population lives in the 40 largest metropolitan statistical areas, MSAs. We want to get to half of them in the next 5 to 6 years. And we want to, 10% of all Christians go to churches of 1,000 people plus. There's about 15,000 of them when you include all Protestant and Catholic churches. And we want to get to half of them over the next 5 to 6 years. If we do that effectively, we'll have hit a tipping point where we can actually start shifting marital and family dynamics on a nationwide level. That's the goal.
Yeah. Well, JP, sounds ambitious. Sounds really interesting. We'll be watching.
Thank you, Warren. Much appreciated. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. That brings to a close my conversation with JP DeGance. Earlier in the program, we heard from the nation's first snowflake baby, Hannah Strege, and her family. I had both of these conversations at the annual meeting of the National Religious Broadcasters in Nashville, Tennessee. A couple of quick reminders before we go. First, the Listening In Archives has nearly 400 of my interviews with politicians, artists, musicians, directors, and screenwriters, and other culture makers. If you're new to the program, I'd like to encourage you to explore our back catalog. And you can do that by going to the World News Group website. That's WNG.org. And you can use the search engine to find what you're looking for. I also want to thank the nearly 700 of you who've responded to my request to rate the podcast. Rating the program just takes a few seconds, and the more reviews we have, the better the program performs with search engines. So it's a great way for you to support Listening In at no cost to you. Also, if you're so inclined, do leave a comment. I read them all, and I've been encouraged and sometimes challenged by all the great feedback. Listening In comes to you from World News Group, and this program is just one of the many benefits of World membership. To find out more about becoming a member of World, you can go to getworldnow.com. The producer for today's program is Johnny Franklin, and he gets technical support from Carl Peets and Kristen Flavin. Our executive producer is Nick Eicher. I'm your host, Warren Smith, and you've been Listening In.